What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
Where you want to be, baseball with the Royals. If you want to be
having a great time,
you want to be
loving the fun,
you want to see all of the excitement, this is the place, and we're the one. If you want to be yelling like crazy for the guys you love to see.
It's pretty cool they got Jay Lynch on here.
Yeah, it is.
I'm sorry, that's Dennis Leary. You throw the ball, Scotty. You catch it and you throw it. Sure. Goes to show you that kids can teach more than parents. Watch The Sandlot. That's the main takeaway from that.
That's Dennis Leary?
Or Jane Lynch. One of the two. I think it's Dennis Lynch. Or Jane Leary. Who'd you rather hang out with, Dennis Lynch or Jane Leary?
Jane Leary.
I think so. You are the weakest link. Mac, you want to take a guess at what wild card game had the most views or ratings?
Let's do what? Packers, Bears?
Nope. It was the Niners and the Eagles on Fox for 41 million.
Mm-hmm. Perfectly placed, 3:30 on Sunday.
Makes sense, yeah.
The next one was the Bills, Jags, 32.7, followed by the Packers, Bears at 31.6. Followed by the Chargers, Patriots, and the last place, Rams, Panthers. But that was the first game on Saturday afternoon, wasn't it?
Yeah. They always put the stinker there.
And that was
they believed to be the stinker.
And then they have a couple, they have a comment in there. It says, two observations. Packers, Bears was definitely hurt by being on Prime. That's a terrible rating for Chargers, Pats game on NBC.
Did you hear this background to the Tomlin stuff that is now starting to leak out about what's going on? And this is from Peter Schrager at ESPN right now is where he is.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I've been told the Steelers aren't going to just let him hit the market. This is going to be one of those where if you want to have Tomlin's services as a coach, you're going to have to trade something to the Steelers like Sean Payton had. The Broncos have to have trade something to the Saints. I don't understand if the contract expires and it works and he sits out a year and the contract is over, why would you still owe something to the Pittsburgh Steelers? You know, I don't know, you know, the inner workings of that. But Schrager also gave the details on how all this went down. Tomlin showed up at 9 a.m., told the owner he was stepping down, then met with the team at 1:30 in the afternoon. And this is the key. He wanted to be able to shake everybody's hand individually.
Oh, yeah. It's a man's man right
That's
there.
A man's man.
Hell yeah. And
Arthur,
look him in the eye.
Yeah. And Arthur, and it goes back to the comment from, you know, McGinnis that you were talking about earlier about, you know, just the way that this guy is a leader. That's mm-hmm. why I like Mike Tomlin. I don't know anything about his X's and O's guys. I honestly have no idea what defense he favors, what offense he favors, or anything like that. But I just know that he's a leader, and he's somebody you want to go to work for, and he's somebody that has your back, and he's somebody that you want to have, you know, the back of. And, you know, even Arthur Smith yesterday was making the quote about how he relates to every individual person, and every individual person in that organization has their own relationship, basically, with Mike Tomlin. And that's the way you need to do it. Have different relationships that fit each individual person. And so, like, I don't think he's going to be around long where people are saying, you know, is Mike Tomlin going to do anything? Are we going to see him? I think we'll see him right away on TV. I'd love to see him back in the NFL. But as these stories start to come out, you realize why Mike Tomlin is just different and better than just about everybody else who's coached in the NFL at this time.
Somebody says his contract doesn't expire. It's just paused. He will have to be traded no matter what.
Oh, I don't know.
Kind of like Sean Payton. How long was he out of the league? And then Denver still had to give up a one and a two.
I believe so.
Is that what they gave it for Sean?
Yeah.
And Sean hadn't coached in years.
Yeah. No, right. 2 years, I thought. I thought he was only on TV for a year, right?
Well, either way, same situation with Tomlin. Yeah. They still had to give it up because it was just pause. It's like,
okay,
that's what I'm getting at from what they say. Somebody said yesterday on Twitter, Mike Tomlin went into season one with the Steelers looking like Bernie Mac and came out in season like seven or whatever it was coming out like Mike Tomlin. It's so crazy when they do that, like even with like the presidents,
yeah.
and they say like day one in office versus day like
oh,
year
yeah.
eight in office, you see like the difference. until now. And like they have like the Mike Tomlin first day coaching, and they show Mike Tomlin like yesterday, and you're like, damn,
yeah.
This is a stressful job.
Jim Harbaugh kind of looked the same though. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, like Harbs didn't get much older, you know. Tomlin got older because he was a younger guy when he took that job, right? And Harbaugh wasn't as young as Tomlin, so that's fun, man.
Got a pair of respects.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it. Well, hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Yep.
So we asked a question earlier because I want to know who's real and who's not, and I've got 14.9% of non-real people. Fesco and Dusty Wednesday poll question: as a Chiefs fan, who are you rooting for on Saturday, the Bills or the Broncos? 85% of you say the Bills. 14.9% say the Broncos. I'm confused as if why there's 14.9 of you.
Okay, let me say this though. Have you guys seen the maps that they send out of what states are rooting for what teams in the playoffs and all of that? Go look at the map of Kansas that they sent out, because if you look at it, like the first two counties from the state line in are all rooting for Chicago. But I would say like 95% of Kansas, they have shaded blue that are rooting for the Denver Broncos. So maybe we've got people out in western Kansas, like Topeka and places like that, fair. That could be listening, that were Bronco fans at one point, and, you know, whatever the case may be. And so maybe that's what it is. I just can't imagine waking up as a Chiefs fan this morning and saying, I'd rather have Denver win than Buffalo. I just can't imagine that. That's a division rival. We don't root for division rivals on any circumstance.
I don't have a fiber in my being to say, come on, Denver, you got this. Like, that almost made me vomit. You talk about Ben Maller talking about a vomit comment. That's the biggest vomit comment you could have, is Denver having a victory lap going to the AFC Championship game. I don't want to see that. I want to see Josh Allen do what Patrick Mahomes did, right? I want to see him go on the road for every single game and win to get to the Super Bowl. People questioned Patrick Mahomes do it, and he did it.
He did it.
Right? He went everywhere. One on the road one place, then went on the road again, then went on the road again and beat Buffalo at home, beat Baltimore at home, and then went to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl.
Could you imagine next week the AFC Championship game's in Houston? Houston versus Buffalo down there? Because that's what's going... I mean...
It's a possibility.
Yeah.
But also, you could have Buffalo-New England round three.
Yeah, you could.
Which I think a lot of people are signing up for that. I think a lot of people would sign up for that.
Why wouldn't you sign up for that? That's awesome. That would be great. I'm torn.
Do you really want Denver versus Houston?
No,
it's weak.
That is a likely outcome too, though.
I mean, obviously, you know, yes,
it's wide open. Yeah, AFC is wide open.
I mean, if CJ Stroud plays like he did, just like half of what he, if he turns the ball over two times against New England, they will not win that game.
Or just run a little bit. Just be smart. Like,
I just didn't understand it. Like the flea flicker play when you were controlling the game, and that didn't make
sense.
Yeah,
what was the point of that?
I did not understand that whatsoever. Like that happened. I'm like, dude, just keep giving it to Marks.
I think they were just trying to jumpstart their guy. I don't know what
I think they were going for the kill switch. I think that's what they were doing. They were going for the, they're up 7-0 or 7-3. They throw that play on you. It's 14-3. They know you're not scoring 10 points. And then it's just like, okay, can we, because eventually that moment happened when Rodgers fumbled, they picked it up and walked it in. That was when the game was officially done, because Pittsburgh was not moving the ball. What was it? Houston had like 400 plus yards on offense and Steelers had like 130. I mean, that's just, we knew that game was coming.
Yep.
Like we saw that in the works. We knew that game was going to be a blowout. We knew Houston's defense was going to hold serve on that. Houston's defense is very similar to what Philly's did last year.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, Philly had all their offensive weapons. No Nico Collins is insanely scary.
But also, across the board, you're losing Christian Gonzalez as well. And so I think there's a wash there for that, for me anyway.
And then who was it? Was it Buffalo? No, it was, Houston? No, not Houston. Was New England? Did New England lose a lineman? Did they lose somebody to an injury? Not Christian Gonzalez, but somebody like that? Or am I thinking NFC side?
I don't know. I'll have to think. I don't know.
I'm sure everybody lost a lineman.
Yeah,
in games.
A lot of people are losing everyone. I don't know.
They were talking about yesterday, like, as a big loss and what it could impact on the game. But a big gain at Kauffman Stadium is they moved some of the walls in.
I think what this has ended up is, like, we have tried for 30 years to find an outfield bat. Screw it. We're just moving in the walls and let's benefit and build this ballpark around what we have here. If you can't beat them, join them, or whatever they like to say at all times, because this has been a conversation about the walls at Kauffman Stadium since I've been doing this job, and I've been doing this job in Kansas City since 2001. It was one of the first things we've ever talked about, you know. Oh, they need to move in the fences. I remember sitting out there in the press box days of Kauffman Stadium and hearing, you know, people opine and talk about moving in the fences and all of that kind of stuff. The problem was the Royals never had any pitching back. back in those days, right? You had Chris George, you had Dan Reichert, you had, you know, Chad Durbin and
Daryl May.
Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't a collection of great arms that you had. Brian Anderson and Daryl May were actually pretty good pitchers, but I mean, you had nothing else, you know, with your operation at that point. You had nobody to keep the ball in ballpark. And so you're thinking to yourself, all right, what are we going to do? Let's move in the fences. So they did it for a year, and then they got, you know, lit up, and then they moved the fences back. And that was in the early aughts. And now here we sit in 2026, and the Royals have been very quiet this offseason. You know, I think they're in the top five least spending teams when it comes to free agency, and there haven't been any moves. And I think after about 30 years of trying to go out there and acquire that outfield bat and that big bopper, the Royals have just finally said, you know what? We're probably not going to be able to do it. Let's just go in and move in the fences and benefit the guys that we currently have in our lineup right now. And really, since the pandemic, the Royals, you know, in this era, since John Sherman took over, have been kind of brutal when it comes to finding an outfield. They gave up on Rooker and O'Hearn. They backfilled with Renfro and Michael A. Taylor and Garrett Hampson. They missed on MJ Melendez and maybe Tolbert in the draft. And so they need to find more than just Kyle Isbell to be one of those guys that they can count on in the outfield. And they just haven't been able to do that. And so what they're saying is, hey, the hell with it. Let's move in some of these fences and see what we can do. And I poured all the information into, you know, the AI as we're doing these days. And they're like, yeah, they probably would have gotten 3 to 4 more wins last year out of it. And you know what? That's the difference between not making the playoffs and making the playoffs, or those 3 or 4 wins. So if it's going to bring you 3 or 4 more wins, let's go.
So shocked to hear Daryl May was good.
Daryl May was a pretty good pitcher for this team. Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah, in that 2003 season, he was a pretty reliable guy.
Yeah. I mean, gave up 31 home runs and a ton of hits. 197 hits. I mean, that was his best year. I mean, he had a 3.77 ERA, which is decent, but
hell of a good
67
ERA.
Home runs in 3 years as a pitcher in Kauffman Stadium. Like,
well, he did play road games too.
Yeah, that's fair. Boy, that 2004 year was brutal. 9-19.
Everything was brutal that year.
That was a very brutal year. Very, very brutal. That was my sophomore year in high school, and I hated everything about it because the year before it was like,
it was great, right? And so they tried to build on that,
Do you think a lot? So your take is they want to kind of can't beat them, join them.
Okay. You can't afford to get an outfield bat, so you're going to go out there and.
How do these decisions get made? Is it just ownership that says, hey, let's move the walls says, do it?
Yeah, but these conversations have been having for years.
I understand that, but I'm just trying to say, who's the executive decision maker?
I think it ultimately is JJ and, you know, his guys. Okay. So I would think where they probably go to ownership and say, hey.
I would assume so, because that's JJ talked for most of the media yesterday.
I don't need to hear what ownership has to say about the walls.
Right, you know? Yeah. So I'm just trying to figure out whose decision it is. So love the decision. Mm-hmm. I also love the stones it shows of what you trust in your pitching staff.
Yeah, because now the pitchers have to keep it in the ballpark as well, because we never think of the flip side. If I go for two and don't get it, what's the downfall? Nobody ever thinks of that. If we move in the fences, what could be the, well, nobody thinks of that. It's going to increase our offense. Yeah, but also your pitchers. The good news is for Royals pitchers, they give up a lot of fly balls, but most of the fly balls they give up are soft fly balls. You know, AI had all the nerd stat breakdowns and all that kind
I'm
of stuff.
Not into that.
You know, and I'm not into that either. Yeah. But if you're going through the reasoning of why the Royals are into nerd stats, okay, they got a guy up there yesterday with JJ talking about all that nerd stuff, right? So they are into that, and so you do factor all of that in. And I understand using that stuff to factor into moving your fences, obviously, because those are things that you can use and say, yeah, you know what? Our pitchers do give up a lot of fly balls, but most of them are soft fly balls and they get a lot of outs. So it's probably not going to hurt our pitching as much as it's going to help our offense. And so I get all the nerd stuff, and you know, you can do all your nerdisms, you know, with that kind of stuff. It's when you're deciding on who to pitch in the third inning or whatever the case may be. I can just use your mind for that.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at your pitching staff and what you can trust. Reagan's strikeout pitcher.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many strikeouts in baseball now.
Right. And Lugo, maybe back to your soft fly ball, but also a good ground ball pitcher, Waka, as well.
Mm-hmm.
Bubic can be a strikeout pitcher. We'll see what his stamina is this year. Then Noah Cameron, you know, we saw him a little bit at times have trouble with the long ball early.
Right.
We saw the Aaron Judge home run that hit the of. And
well, that's play. Aaron Judge.
Again, I'm just saying, but it was early, and then he just kind of settled down. But again, I think this is a big move that shows that you trust your pitching.
Yeah.
To go back on your take on O'Hearn and maybe Michael A. Taylor, I think O'Hearn is a failed product of a terrible hitting coach approach, because it worked in Baltimore. It got him signed. That, to me, is on the hitting coach. I think they developed O'Hearn in Baltimore, and it turned his career.
But I'm saying the Royals failed at developing him.
Yeah, but I thought it was all just on, like, Sherman. I'm just saying.
Oh,
like,
no. I'm just saying from when John took over to where. Okay. I mean, we could go back and look at all the outfielders since the Allard Baird days.
I mean, Michael A. Taylor won a Gold Glove playing that
but not offensively.
And he was decent on offense. I mean, he was okay. He's better than Hampson, Renfro, and those other guys. But again, like, Rooker was also failed in Minnesota. Like, Minnesota gave up on him, too. They're not the only franchise.
No, the Royals aren't, no.
And sometimes in baseball, that 32-year-old randomly pops up, and you're like, where has this guy been? Well, he's been with Toronto, Minnesota, Kansas City, and now he's here, and it's working. So, again, it, to me, it's just the value of, like, how you are developing. And you're right. There has been piss-poor development when it came to
the outfield. It's been terrible. Yeah, for generations.
And I mean, we're hoping that Cags can nip that in the bud.
I mean, again, when I started this in 2001, the conversation was, do the Chiefs get a wide receiver or do the Royals get an offensive bat first? Like, those were the conversations we were having, right? Obviously, the Chiefs got Tyreek Hill, and the Royals still are looking for that coveted outfield bat that they've not been able to find or develop in the last 35 years.
And you've got a lot of people out here that have the opinion of Royals' poor excuse to not spend money to bring in an outfield wall. Come on, LMAO. Okay, guys.
I'm not surprised that that's the take. I'm not. I mean, that's a fair take. I mean, because that's what I was like, okay, because they said they were going to try to get an outfield bat or whatever the case may be. And they haven't been able to do that. And so you start to go, okay, if we can't get this big bopper bat, but we got guys that can hit it in the gap, let's bring in the fences a little bit. And let's tailor the ballpark to a better place for our guys to play. And as Vinny said yesterday, the ballpark now becomes a neutral ballpark for everybody. But the fact of the matter is, like, when you look at what this stadium has done, it has not been a bad offensive ballpark at all. It's been a bad home run ballpark. It's like 25th in baseball when it comes to giving up home runs. But when you talk about doubles, triples, and runs scored, Kauffman Stadium is a top 5 or 6 ballpark in every one of those categories of giving up doubles and triples and runs. So there is offensive production. It's just different than the home run. And that's part of the problem with baseball right now, is we're so fixated on the home run and the strikeout. Like the three clean outs or plate appearances or whatever they say, a strikeout, a home run, and a walk and all that kind of stuff. Like, we're focused on that. Let's get back to the Hosmer days and popping one in the gap and rounding the bases and using speed and playing fun baseball.
Well, see, that's going to be taken out a little bit. Like, the walls moving the way they are is going to affect Michael Garcia and Bobby Witt Jr. when it comes to those doubles and maybe triples that you see happen a lot, because those walls will be in, the angles will be different.
And you won't be able to, like, you won't be able to get on your horse and turn a double into a triple.
We'll see. J.J. Piccolo also said that Bobby Witt Jr. was one of the most negatively affected people at Kauffman Stadium. So we'll see if the dimensions really do change. You know, last year you said, we're a playoff team. This year you're saying we're going to hit more home runs. So we'll see what they do with that promise. You're upset that Arenado's not a Royal?
Yeah, I would have loved him here. I think he would have been a great fit for this team.
He signed a third baseman for the future.
Yeah, but you could also move him to the outfield.
Why would you do that?
Because Arenado's a better defensive third baseman.
Not right now, he's not.
He's a better offensive guy in your lineup as well. I think he would be a great fit here in Kansas
City. Look at his numbers from last year.
I saw him last year. It's a down year. That was a terrible situation last year.
That's also age.
Yeah, but it was also a bad situation in St. Louis. The Cardinals gave up nothing for, or the, not the Cardinals, the Diamondbacks gave up nothing for Nolan Arenado. He would have been a great fit in this lineup, a great veteran bat that you could have used in this lineup. I would have been willing to move Michael Garcia, because you don't have an outfield still. I would have still been willing to move Michael Garcia to left or right field and played him there for a couple of years and had Nolan Arenado at third base. I think that would have been a good move for the Royals. I understand why you didn't do it, and you make good points with all of that, but I still think he's a solid bat in your lineup, and you still need a solid bat in your lineup. This lineup right now, I'm still going, like Vern said the other day, I'm like, I don't know if I love this lineup going into the start of the season.
Yeah, Arenado does nothing for me. Like, I mean, 250, I mean, he's a player that is great 4 years ago, and it was diminishing quickly in St. Louis, and that's why a lot of their fans are upset, because they missed the boat on when they could get anything back for him.
Yeah.
And then this year, it was kind of the confusion of, are you going to be at the trade deadline? Are you not? Are you going to be a part of this team? Are you not? And then he stuck it out the whole year. The fans gave him all that sort of stuff. But Michael Garcia hit almost 50 points higher than Nolan Arenado last year.
Oh, his bat's still in the lineup.
His glove is better than his. And you have such a great thing. Like, we just had Cotrero in here in studio. We're like, how great is your left side of your infield? You've got Michael Garcia, Bobby Witt Jr., and then you have, you know, Kyle Isbell in center, who plays a very well good center field at Kauffman Stadium. And I don't think that you mess with that. You finally figured out what you have and you leave it alone and you just say, hey, you're my future. Because look what it did to when they brought Bregman in to the Giants. That guy was like, or whoever that was to the Giants, he's like, what? You're going to, or it was Boston.
Yeah,
he's
Boston.
He was like, you're going to bring in this guy because he's a gold glove winner as well. So am I. I play good third base. Get me the hell out of here.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with competition. And as far as I'm concerned.
I do when you just signed a guy.
Yeah, I don't. Competition makes everybody better.
Not that type. Backup quarterback getting drafted with a guy who's failed the last 3 years. That's a competition I'm all about. A receiver who hasn't made it over the last 3 years, mm-hmm. who's got some shaky issues, you bring in a rookie wide receiver to the draft and say, who's number one? That's a competition. A guy that I've just told is the future of my third base, the Gold Glover, figured everything out, key part of the lineup, and say, we're going to bring in this 34-year-old because of his history, not mm-hmm. because of what he can do in the future. Yeah, that, to me, is not a competition that makes anybody better.
Yeah, I look at it and I go, you have nobody in your outfield right now other than Kyle Isbell that I can truly count on to go out there and get the job done. And it would have made the overall team better if you could get a bat at third base and then have Michael Garcia in the outfield. Now you're going probably 6-7 deep in your lineup, and that's pretty good because I don't know how many teams go 5 deep anymore in Major League Baseball. Every team talks about the bottom third of their lineup being really bad, but all of a sudden you've got Michael Garcia, you got Bobby Witt, you got Vinny, you got Salvi, you got Isbell. Now you add in Arenado into that mix. Maybe you move Garcia to second base and put Arenado at third base, and now all of a sudden you increase the competition for India or for Massey, or maybe one of those guys can move into the outfield. I just think that piece could have given you a lot of roster and lineup flexibility, which, as we know, they love that kind of stuff in baseball these days.
Yeah, I would think that would be good for maybe 3 years ago. But I just think Arenado's at that point where it's like, I don't want to give somebody like that, an aging player, money, because that's what the Royals did in the past, and we watched it fail.
Yeah.
I mean, Jose Guillen's an example of that. Juan Gonzalez is an example of that. We've seen that with multiple players.
And they're not giving much money, though. The Cardinals are eating most of that salary. I think Arizona owes him $4 million this year, which is going to be deferred money to 2030, or when the contract is up. And then they owe him like $6 million next year. So for the next 2 years, you're basically paying $10 million to get a really, really good veteran-proven bat.
Bob has a great question for discussion on the other side. Plus, he has a divorced friend that sent him some audio that's pretty hilarious. Here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan. Fesco and Dusty is brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. 2 new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.